Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Taro Du Johnson weaves distinctive contemporary baskets with a range of styles, colors, and materials. In his latest collection, woven pieces range from traditional to spiraling pieces that command an entire room and bear little resemblance to established designs. Johnson is also a food justice advocate and CEO of the Tohono O'odham Community Action Group. Johnson is our native in the spotlight. We'll talk to him right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Treaty of Fort Laramie, signed 150 years ago, was commemorated over the weekend. South Dakota tribal members were among those who gathered at the site in Wyoming. Lee Strubinger has more.
The 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie guaranteed a large swath of land from Nebraska to Montana, which included the Black Hills and the east bank of the Missouri River. Eventually, the established treaty area got whittled down to modern-day reservations. The 150 years between the treaty signing and today include events like the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre. Faith Spotted Eagle is Ihonctowan Dakota from the Yankton Reservation. She says the commemoration is bittersweet.
Some leaders were hesitant to come because there are people who were non-treaty signers from certain families. It's not a celebration. It's a very large time in history where we were against the wall, our children are dying, our language is outlawed, but it was just the onslaught of settlers coming into our territory. It was actually during the Indian Wars, and so I know that a lot of our leaders were backed against the wall.
Claude Two Elk is Sichangu Lakota from the Rosebud Reservation. He's a member of the Treaty Council.
Historical trauma has created a lot of our behavior of our people, and a lot of our people is not aware of what the trauma has done to the spirit of our people. One of the reasons why I'm here to help all of our nations to become aware of the past and to go through that healing process of knowing who we are and become more involved with our treaties.
Tribes still use the treaty for education and healthcare funding, as well as rights as sovereign nations. The commemoration was 2 years in the making. National Park Service officials say they're continuing that dialogue between the park and tribes to permanently incorporate tribal perspectives in the telling of the historical site. I'm Lee Strubinger in Fort Laramie, Wyoming.
A group of 10 U.S. senators sent a letter Friday to the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. The senators, including Vice Chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee, Tom Udall, are concerned the agency has expressed views which they say challenge the unique legal status and protections of tribes. At issue is the administration's view over Medicaid work requirement exemptions for tribes, which health officials state could not be granted because they would be race-based. The letter states the views fail to recognize the legal status of tribes and tribal members under federal law, the Constitution, treaties, and the federal trust relationship. The senators are asking for clarification and say Medicaid and Medicare programs are essential to fulfilling trust and treaty obligations to tribes. Concerns are being raised as states are planning to implement new Medicaid work requirements. Taylor Susan from the White Mountain Apache and Walker River Paiute tribes was crowned as the 2018 Miss Indian World on Saturday at the Gathering of Nations powwow in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She was among 30 Native women from tribes across the U.S. and Canada vying for the title. Taylor is currently a student at the University of Arizona. The 25-year-old will serve as a cultural ambassador for the year. Former chairman of the Cabazon Band of Mission Indians, John James, is being remembered for his work in Indian gaming. A press release states James recently passed away peacefully among family and friends. He was known as the father of Native American gaming. He established bingo and poker at the California tribe and guided the tribe through court in a landmark case which affirmed gaming rights on tribal lands. It helped create the Indian gaming industry across the country. James was a Korean War veteran and served as chairman of the tribe for more than 20 years. He was 87 years old at the time of his death. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Today we are putting the spotlight on Terrell Dew Johnson. He's our April Native in the Spotlight. And he comes to us from the Tohono O'odham Nation, and he has his hands in a lot of things. And he's an expert basket weaver whose work is collected by the National Museum of the American Indian, the Heard Museum, and many others around the country. And he's known for using a wide range of materials, and he ventures into contemporary styles. One collaboration with Aranda Lash Architect Studio, he did a lot, and he stretched the boundaries of basket weaving with designs based on complex mathematical formulas. Johnson is also an advocate for healthy traditional foods, and he co-founded the Tohono O'odham Community Action, or TOCA. And it's a program dedicated to preserving and strengthening indigenous food and food knowledge. And he is helping bring traditional foods to the Tohono O'odham Nation, and he's looking forward to expanding the concept of a cafe and restaurant to a metro area. We'll talk with Johnson more about his work in art and food, and you are also welcome to join too. We are at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And right now, it is my pleasure to bring him in. Joining us today from Tucson, Arizona, is Terrell Dew Johnson, and he is the CEO of TOCA, or the Tohono O'odham Community Action Nonprofit Group. And he's also a contemporary basket weaver and a proud member of the Tohono O'odham Nation. It's our pleasure to welcome him to the hour. Terrell, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And Terrell, I imagine we could probably fill many hours just talking about some of the work that you do, some of the things that you've witnessed, and definitely about your passion to bring culture forward in different forms. And let's go ahead and start a little bit with your artwork. And we mentioned your collaboration with Aranda Lash. Tell us more about this collection and kind of how you feel it does strengthen your culture.
Well, this collaboration that I've been having with the architect firm Aranda Lash has been ongoing since, for about 10 years or so. And, you know, it all started with them listening to one of my lectures I did up in New York City I was promoting a show that I was doing with the Museum of the National Museum of American Indian Art. And they were really excited by this exhibit. And I think really just heard what I had to say about basket weaving and contemporary basket weaving. And so we started working together and started creating these pieces of artwork that were heavily based on traditional basket weaving that Native American people have been doing for thousands of years, but also just the mathematical and scientific way of building structures. And so this collaboration that we've been doing for several years have just evolved into amazing work that is now showing all over the world. And it's really great to be part of a team that definitely can sort of shake the art world with traditional backgrounds, but also with new innovative tools to create pieces like that. And it's really exciting because it gives me a platform and a chance to promote my culture and the people and, you know, the art that comes out of the Sonoran Desert that the Dona Altam people are from.
And Terrell, with that, explain or just describe a little bit about some of the visual side of the creations you were just talking about.
Well, you know, part of this collaboration is, you know, we sit down and we talk and we just brainstorm about pieces of things that we want people to see and sort of the statement that we want to make. And my job as the artist, as part of the collaboration, is to think about, well, how am I going to get these designs that we create in the computer into the real world? And so my job is to figure out what kind of color, what kind of material, what kind of texture we want to give to the pieces, what kind of smell, you know, try to use all the senses that as a basket weaver I use to create baskets. And so I look in my surroundings and try to incorporate material from the desert like creosote or bark or yucca and bear grass. And so I add that into pieces to create, to bring to life, to bring into the real world instead of having it stuck in the virtual world. And so I really enjoy that because I get to incorporate not only non-traditional but traditional materials to create these amazing, beautiful pieces that, again, is just stimulating to the eyes, stimulating to the senses that we have. You know, because you can hear fibers moving, you can smell the fibers, the freshness from the desert, and it's just amazing. And I get to be part of this team that does this kind of work.
Well, I think you are definitely highlighting something that is very special when you get a basket that is freshly woven, and then you know you have it in your hands, and you are participating with where this creation came from, and smelling some of the environment that it grew up in. And folks, is that one of your favorite aspects about baskets, native baskets, and weaving? Maybe you're a weaver yourself, and maybe that's a favorite part that of the whole process that you like to talk about today. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Terrell, when you are weaving some of these baskets, whether it be through collaboration or just something that is coming out of your heart, where does your mind go when you are going through some of those motions and moving the fabric together? And as we know, some of these baskets can take a while. And so where do you go when you're weaving?
Wow, gosh. Well, for myself, it's really therapeutic. I mean, you know, for myself, I just get immersed in the process. And, you know, just thinking about things and really having really good thoughts about when I start a piece, because, you know, as I was taught through my teachers, is that you got to be in the right frame of mind to pick up the materials, to start weaving the materials and creating your piece, because this is what the end result is going to be in your piece. And when your emotions and your feelings are going to show through in that piece. And so you always want to have good thoughts and be in a good frame of mind. Because if you're not, and you're in a bad mood and things aren't working, it definitely will show in your work. And so when I want to have these pieces seen by people, you want them to see the best of what you could do. And I always tell people that, you know, if I am in a bad mood or if there is something bothering me, you know, I will sit and start to work on the piece, and it's almost healing, and it definitely puts me back into a really good frame of mind, because, you know, this is therapeutic for me. And I know that when I'm weaving, people will see that, and you know, that's what you want to bring across. And so for myself, I just love it. You know, the smell of the material, the fresh material, it's a therapeutic, you know, listening to the fibers, you know, the sound that you make when you poke a hole in your fibers and you bring your material through, you can hear that go through that little hole, and you know, it's just something that is amazing, and I'm really glad that I actually can create this and do that. I did this one piece years ago called Sweet Sensation, and it was a basket that I did that incorporated sweetgrass, and so a museum had bought that, but years later the basket was actually on display, but it was encased in a plexiglass, and I was like, well, that doesn't really it defeats the purpose of why I made that basket, because I really wanted people to smell it, but it was encased in the plexiglass. So I was telling the museum people, I said, why don't you drill holes in there so when they put their nose close to the box, they can smell the grass. But they were like, oh, no, we can't do that. So it was kind of a shame, but it was a beautiful piece, and I really enjoyed it. And the sweetgrass I got were my friends from Maine who gave me the sweetgrass, and I just threw it into the basket just to create one of the senses. So, you know, if you, people want to see that, they can go to the Arizona State Museum.
Well, the smell of sweetgrass is so nice. And, you know, when you think about the ways that you were taught, and I really appreciate what you just shared about needing to be in a good space when you're working on some of this. And Terrell, I'm curious about how you actually got into all of this. Tell me that part of the story. And folks, you know, we're talking basket weaving now. Terrell is also very involved with the food sovereignty movement. We'll hear about that coming up this hour. But if there's anything you'd like to ask him, or maybe you're wondering about some of his process, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And Terrell, tell me a little bit about how this all began.
Well, you know, I started weaving when I was 10 years old, you know, and it was a course that was given in school on the reservation. And the teacher that was giving the basket weaving course was the late Margaret Acosta, who's my teacher. And it was part of the Native American Studies. And so I think I took to that class because at the time I didn't know what I had. But years later, we found out that I was actually severely dyslexic. And so I never could really take to reading or writing normally. So what was best for me to learn things was to someone actually sit down and show me, or to actually tell me and walk me through it. And so basket weaving, Thana Othman basket weaving, is like that. So we had a teacher there who taught us the fibers and taught us how to, the motions of weaving a basket, and she was there to show us hands-on how to do that. And I took to that very well because, you know, I didn't have to read step-by-step in a book because of the dyslexia. And so I think I grabbed that and absorbed all that fast and easily. And so I think that's how I started really getting into basket weaving. And then just the idea of learning something from the idea, the first idea to actually weaving it and the end result was what I really enjoyed. I loved that process. And so weaving was actually really natural for me. And I just took off with it. And I just started weaving day and night and trying to meet as many people as I knew to get to learn from them. And so Margaret was my very first teacher and has been from the very end. And from there, I met other basket weavers, elders that had other techniques and other knowledge of basket weaving, and I just would sit with them and hang on to them and maybe like mentor with them for a summer or a year or so, and you know, the idea was just to learn as much as I could about basketry, especially Thana Othman basketry.
And from straight from, I guess you could say, the experts too. And Terrell, when you think about this craft and what kind of knowledge you are able to gain, how do you feel about that? That you are, you know, basically helping this tradition keep alive?
It's a huge responsibility, and I'm really excited and honored to do that. You know, my teachers always said, you know, teach what you learn. And I have been doing that from the very beginning. And I have amazing experiences teaching other people, especially from my tribe, but other tribes and also non-natives as well. And, you know, I'm really excited that the young people that I have taught and mentored are actually at that point where they are teaching and mentoring others about basket weaving. And, you know, when I started learning, a lot of weavers were very afraid that it wasn't going to be kept alive and passed on. And so traditionally, you know, weaving was done by women. But at the time I was learning, they were afraid of it being lost. And so they all, you know, some of them decided, well, it doesn't really matter who is weaving as long as it's been kept alive. And so with that, I think that's how I really was embraced by a lot of weavers. And but also remember, I wasn't also the favorite amongst others as well, because I was a guy weaving. But I think over time, again, they came around and saw the work that I was doing and the impact that I had made in the community.
And do you feel that all of this called you?
Definitely. I definitely do think it was. I think it was definitely a calling. And, you know, the work that I do now is all... It all comes together and is all for a purpose. And, you know, basket weaving related to the language, and the language went on to the foods, and it was all cultural revitalization. And I just came at through a different venue than other people have. And so I just think I'm one of those people that are contributing to the cause.
Wow. Well, Tara, I am enjoying hearing your thoughts on all this today, and maybe you are too. You want to talk directly to Tara? All you got to do is give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Tara, one design that comes out of your area of the country is the Man in the Maze design. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on this? Because sometimes we see this on emblems or a representation, and I'm wondering its place in cultural teaching and your thoughts about maybe, you know, it going beyond tribal borders.
Well, again, the Man in the Maze is one of those designs that is in the public domain. But it's definitely the symbol of our tribe. And, you know, it's a very sacred symbol for us. And, you know, I've used it in basket weaving. That was actually one of the hardest designs I did when I was learning how to basket weave. And my teacher, Margaret, said, you know, this is a really hard design, but once you get it, it'll always be with you. And I attempted it once, and she was right. You know, once I got it, it was so easy to do, but also definitely hard. And, you know, the symbol of it is a lot of people refer to it as the maze of light. You follow that light center in the middle, and every turn that you make is really close and fast in the center. But that also represents your growing points, your learning curves of life. And once you start to follow your path and get older, the turning points become further and further apart. And it's because, you know, during life you're learning and you're maturing and you're growing. And once you finish the maze, you end up with the creator in the center there. And so I explained that to a lot of people, and they relate to that. They understand that. And, you know, there's several versions of that in the Southwest. For myself, you know, that's still a very sacred, teachable meaning behind the Man of the Maze. And I love doing that in my baskets, but also in other things that I do, like jewelry and paintings and things like that.
And I wonder the reaction young people get when you tell them that story. I know people, you know, as they've aged, I can see how they can quickly relate of some of those turns and how things kind of evolve as you get older. And it's really interesting. This weekend, had a conversation with a gentleman and his daughter, and she was so excited to meet somebody from the Tohono O'odham Nation, and she had really been drawn to this design. And when her father told her, you know, this person is from your favorite design community, her eyes just lit up. I don't know if she knew the full story. And, you know, today I could tell it to her. But I think it's real interesting. And I'm wondering, how do kids react when you do tell that story?
You know, a lot of the kids, when they hear that, they, again, also too light up, because it gives them a sense of where their path is going. It gives them sort of like a life map, guideline kind of thing. And, you know, they understand that, you know, when they're young, it's rough. You know, there's a lot of learning curves that they have to go through and lessons that they have to go through that life throws at them. And so they understand that, you know, when you're going through the man in the maze in the very beginning, there's a lot of those turns. But they also understand that, you know, as you get older, it may get a lot easier because you're learning these life lessons and it's getting easier and you're getting wiser. And so sadly, a lot of the youth today don't have that kind of guidance, you know, that direction. And so with the maze and someone explaining that, but also having the support from the community or their families, you know, the path of life, the man in the maze, their travels will be a lot easier and more understandable. So, you know, I think a lot of the young people today need that and want that. So when they hear that story, it's really encouraging. You know, it makes it a little bit more not scary for them, you know, that they have to take this journey alone, you know, that they have the support of the community, they have the support of the family. So I think a lot of kids want to hear that. They want to hear that.
They certainly do. And I think it's really, you know, something to celebrate. All of these concepts, and we know each of our different communities have different teaching tools, different lessons, and some of these concepts are so simple, but yet they are so powerful, and you continue to carry them throughout your life, or either they get deeper meaning. And I'm wondering what you're thinking, just hearing a little bit about what Terrell is sharing today. You can join us too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And with what we just heard, what do you think about art forms, teaching our young people our traditions? You can tell me about that too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We do look forward to hearing what you'd like to share with us today as we continue our conversation with our Native in the Spotlight. Terrell Dew Johnson is with us. And after the break, we're going to hear about some of his efforts and why he feels it's important for Native people to connect with traditional foods, and also when there are complex issues in getting access to healthy food. You can join us if you got some thoughts on that too, or maybe you're working a little bit on that in your tribal community. You can share. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. You can also find us on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Our phone lines are open. The Senate failed to pass the Tribal Sovereignty Act. It would have affirmed tribes' right to call the shots when it comes to organized labor on tribal land. Notably, it would allow tribal casinos to keep employee unions at bay. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk about organized labor and tribal self-determination.
Cliché. Take care of yourself this spring. Spring is the season to take care of your health. Get outside, exercise, sign up for health insurance. Call 1-800-318-2596 or visit healthcare.gov. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Elakwa.
Support by the American Indian Tourism Conference, the only national conference on tourism in Indian Country. Designed to share knowledge, experience, and best practices of tourism programs around the country, AITC features workshops, expert speakers, resources, networking opportunities to share, teach, and learn from each other, and training to build capacity and develop tourism programs in Indian Country. Registration available at AITC2018.com or at the conference.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and here at our program, we focus on Indigenous issues and topics. And we're live Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to noon Mountain Time. And if you want to know what topics we focused on in the past, visit our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And you can find many programs there, as well as learn a little bit about our Native nations through the people who come to who are from there. And if you have suggestions for topics, let us know. Send us an email at Native America Calling's website. Our email address is comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. And today we are putting the spotlight on Taro Du Johnson from the Tono Atham Nation, and he is a contemporary basket weaver and Native food sovereignty advocate. He once walked 3,000 miles to raise awareness for diabetes in Native America, and he started TOCA, which is the Tono Atham Community Action Program. And Taro is our April Native in the Spotlight, and are you familiar with his work either in food or in the art field? And do you work in similar areas? You're also welcome to join the conversation today by calling 1-800-996-2848 or send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today is Terrell. He joins us from Tucson, Arizona, and he is also a proud member of the Tono Atham Nation. Terrell, it is our pleasure to continue with our conversation. And before we get into talking a little bit more about your work with food sovereignty, I think we've definitely piqued interest in your art and how you feel about it. Are there any places coming up where people might be able to see just exactly what you were talking about?
Yeah, in August, I think during the week of India Market, I definitely would be there opening a show, Meeting the Clouds Halfway, at the IAIA Museum. So, you know, and they can definitely come to that and have a look at the work there. But also, I'll be teaching this summer at the Idlewild Art School in Palm Springs this summer. And if anyone's interested in taking the class, they can definitely sign up for that. And there's scholarship money for that. So those are the kind of the upcoming shows that I have planned for the summer.
And where do people connect with you in case they want to go deeper with some of those items that you mentioned?
Yeah, they can definitely contact me. My phone number is area code 520-235-1030. Or they can actually go visit the websites of the two organizations that I had mentioned.
Okay, great to hear. And folks, you can also connect directly with him today by calling in 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And so basket weaving in your community, I guess, is getting stronger by the knowledge you have and that are passing on. Something that you are also working to strengthen is traditional foods, making it to your community members. And let's go ahead and talk a little bit about that. How do you like to explain exactly how you connect to food?
You know, for myself, it's, you know, everybody eats food, you know, but for me specifically, it's what we grew up in the Sonoran Desert. And a lot of people, you know, when you tell them you're from the desert, they're like, well, gosh, how did your people live off and what did you guys do? And you know, when we look at the desert, there's nothing out there. And I said, no, there's food everywhere when you go out in the desert. And, you know, I was very fortunate that I grew up with my grandparents who were very knowledgeable about the desert foods and actually ate them every day. And so learning how to go out and pick the desert foods and process and then prepare them was something that was an everyday kind of thing for me. And so learning that, I felt that, you know, I thought everybody did that. But as I got older, you know, there was a lot of people that didn't have that experience. So learning, again, with the idea of teach what you learned and pass it on was basically what I did. And now it's become this movement all over the world with indigenous people. And I can see how that's really important because, again, a lot of the elders were feeling that we were losing this knowledge. So it was very important to find a way to continue and to teach other people this valuable tradition.
And so far, our listening audiences who don't know about this kind of food, what are some of the foods you're referring to, and how does it make you feel when you eat them?
Well, the foods that I'm referring to are the desert foods that the Dona Autumn people eat from the desert. And actually, right now is a great time to talk about choya buds, because right now is the season for choya buds. And so right now, the desert, the choya buds are just about to bloom. And before they bloom, we want to pick them. And this is a great resource for calcium and a lot of really good vitamins that are packed in those little buds there. And so those are the kind of things that we are looking for. And summer's coming along, so one of our most important fruit, our desert fruits, is the saguaro cactus, the bithuch. And so that's going to be coming out in June. And so these are the things that we look forward to during the summertime for our traditional foods. And again, you know, these foods are really healthy. You know, back then, we never knew the really chemical or the scientific makeup of these foods, but we knew that they were good for us, and it healed our body, and it kept our body going through the day. And so we knew that. Our elders knew that. And so, you know, these are the foods that were preventing a lot of these now food illnesses like diabetes and cancers. And so eating these foods are really important. And, you know, it kept us moving as well. It kept us physical and going out and picking these foods and walking and hiking. And so that's one of the benefits of these foods that we are trying to preserve and keep alive. And we knew that now. And, you know, over the years, we veered away from those traditional foods and that traditional knowledge and allowed processed foods to come into our diet. And we allowed all these things to come in, and we forgot about these things. And now we are dealing with these illnesses that are coming on, that are hitting our people all over the world and in the indigenous country. And so right now we're trying to look back at these foods and bring them back and have people aware of these foods so that doesn't die completely.
And that's what exactly you do with Toka. We're going to talk more with Terrell here. If you'd like to join us, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to go ahead and go to our phone lines, Terrell. We're going to hear from John in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening in on KUNM. John, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that your guest tribe. I wasn't aware of where it was.
Oh, well, we'll have him give you more details on that. And what are you wondering today?
Well, I was wondering if there was indigenous material in that part of, I guess it's in southern Arizona, that he uses.
Okay, and you mean for his baskets. Terrell, yeah, let's do some resetting. And for folks who aren't familiar with the area or exactly where your nation is, tell us a little bit about it. And our caller is wondering about materials. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, again, I'm from Arizona, from the Tonawanda Nation, and we're probably the second largest land mass-based tribe in the country. Dene being the first, Tonawanda being the second, and a lot of people compare the size of my reservation to the state of Connecticut. So when you think of the state of Connecticut, that's the size of our reservation. And we are in the southern part of Arizona, and our reservation borders the U.S.-Mexican border. So we're right there on the bottom of the state of Arizona. And, you know, asked about the material. The material that I use for basket weaving traditionally would be yucca, bear grass, devil's claw, and so that's what we use for traditional basket weaving that's actually grown all over the Sonoran Desert that we're from. But also, you can't get that in stores. So you actually have to go and pick that yourself and process it yourself. The other materials that I use are non-traditional materials. Like I've woven with several grasses from around the country, also from other countries. But I also work with metals and wood, and actually anything that I can get my hands on. I always say, you know, I can weave in anything that can bend. If not, then I can bend to it. So it kind of leaves everything up for grabs.
That's a wonderful way of thinking about it. John, hey, thanks for giving us a ring here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. What would you like to add? Call us right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And maybe you are also working in the arena of strengthening food sovereignty in your tribal nation. Tell us about it at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Tara, tell us a little bit more about TOCA and some of its efforts.
Yeah, well, TOCA is a nonprofit based on the Tonawanda Reservation. And, you know, we've been doing this cultural revitalization through the arts, through the food, and through the language for the past 25 years. And our goal was, again, to really look at revitalizing a lot of what a lot of people at the time were saying we weren't doing anymore. You know, we weren't going out and harvesting. We weren't making baskets. We weren't talking the language. And so when we started this organization at the very beginning, you know, we thought, well, let's do that. Let's bring back these traditional foods and let's bring back the language and let's bring back the arts. And that's all it took was just the fact that, you know, community members wanted to do this and wanted to bring it back. And so we didn't have to go through the tribe. We didn't have to go through these different programs. We were just community members at a grassroots level wanting to do this. And we did it. You know, we bought in elders to share this knowledge. We bought in people that were knowledgeable about the food and the arts and the language. And we set up workshops and we set up gatherings, and that's all it took. And then 25 years later, you know, it's become this huge thing that not only TOCA but other people are doing. And that's really good because that's what we wanted. We wanted the community, we wanted the people to take it and own it and do it. And, you know, after 25 years of saying that, it's really nice to see what people in my community are doing, what organizations in my community are doing. It's not just TOCA anymore. It's everybody. And it's really exciting. Makes me feel old, but it also just makes me feel very happy that people are doing it. But then also seeing other tribes around the country doing that, which is amazing. That ripple effect that we started way back then is still rippling and is still growing strong. So that's really exciting to see.
And Terrell, speaking of getting older or being seen as an elder, how did they feel when you came to them and said, you know, by asking and caring, you're basically saying what they know is gold. Tell me a little bit about that. And again, folks, if you want to join us, there's a little bit of time left in the hour. 1-800-996-2848. Go ahead, Terrell.
Well, I'm still far from being an elder, but, you know, the fact that, you know, we approached these elders and wanted to have them share and teach, I think was really an important move back then, because I think back then also, I think a lot of people, a lot of elders especially, were saying, I'm here, you know, I know this stuff. I just need to be asked. And so I think doing that and approaching that, I think made them really understand that they were valuable, that they were needed. You know, every time we lose an elder in any Native community, that's a gold mine of tradition and knowledge that will be gone and never could be bought back. So we're all at a crucial time where we need to sit down and bring in elders and talk to elders and have them share, you know, give them a space, give them an opportunity to share their knowledge. And I think in all Native communities, we have to understand that, you know, but we also have to stand to bring in young people as well, you know, to make that connection and have the two meet, and they can share and they can preserve and learn from each other. And it is so beneficial in so many different levels. And it's really important that people out there in Native communities to understand that how important elders are, that they're the ones that hold this knowledge that needs to be passed down, that needs to be preserved, that needs to be shared. And so just giving them those opportunities is really, really important.
And Tara, both of these ventures, both your basket weaving and thinking about food in this way, they both call on working with the land or connecting to it. And I'm wondering, have there been challenges that have, you know, with changing environment or other different things that have challenged finding materials for your baskets or even having an environment where some of these foods can grow? Are there any challenges that you're facing and how are you overcoming them?
Yeah, well, everything that you just mentioned is everything that we're dealing with, you know, on the reservation. And the big factor is climate change. You know, it's getting hotter and hotter. You know, the other day I was listening to some elders talking about how our weather patterns are so messed up, and it's because it's reflecting what kind of world we're living in. It's messed up, you know, and that was kind of their simple way of saying, look at what we've done. You know, pay attention to how the rain falls or which direction it's coming from. You know, when we were, when I was younger and when I would sing songs or hear elders talk, they say the rain came from the east and went on the west, and that was the direction it always came. But now they're saying it comes from the south, and it comes from the east, and it comes from the west, and it's all messed up, you know. And I was like, wow, you know, you're right, you know. But we got to pay attention to that, and it's getting difficult as a basket weaver to get our material because of the climate change, because of the areas that we pick that are drying up and isn't getting water, but also just man-made causes like development. A lot of the traditional areas where we pick material, it's becoming clear-cut because they're getting ready for development, for housing. So it's really harder, and we're finding that we're getting further and we're further away from our traditional harvesting areas. We're actually even going into other states to pick material. But for food-wise, a lot of our seasonal foods aren't happening when they're supposed to happen because of our weather. You know, in Arizona, we never really had a winter this year. So there was just spurts of coldness. But also there was spurts of high heat. And so a lot of the plants would bloom. And then when it got cold, they'll die again. And when it got hot, it'll bloom again. And so it was just really confusing. And right now it's toilet bud season. And so some areas are blooming and some areas are, the buds haven't even popped up yet. So it's really scary. It's a scary time, but I also feel that, you know, with young people and people getting involved, you know, and being more aware of that, I'm hoping that we could make a change or do something about it. So I'm very hopeful right now. I'm very optimistic right now. So, you know, I'm hoping that things will will change for the better.
And so when you think about some of these challenges, you keep pushing forward. And Terrell, for, you know, people who maybe are listening to this down the road, who want to know more about some of the work you've done or keeping traditions alive, what would you want to tell folks about meeting those challenges, whether it be climate or just trying to find knowledge on how to do some of this weaving? Any advice or thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always get that question, how do I start doing that in my area? And I'm like, it only takes one person. It only takes one person. You don't, if you don't get support from your tribal people or things like that, just move forward. Find someone that can support you and encourage you. You know, find an elder that is willing to share and be a mentor, but also find a youth that is wanting and eager to learn. And with that, you know, you can move forward and you can definitely make an impact in your community. You know, a lot of people are scared because they think, oh, I need money or I need the backup of the council or the tribe. And I said, no, you don't. I think if you see a need for this in your community, you will do it because you may be the only one, you know, but eventually you'll find people that feel the same way you do. And you will definitely get that support and you only can move forward and you only can do good. So, you know, there are going to be some definitely challenges along the way, but you need to just look at them as learning curves, because once you overcome those, it'll get a lot easier and you get a lot stronger. So I usually tell that to a lot of people that ask me that question.
Good words. And Terrell, not only are you bringing this to your community, but you're bringing some of what you're talking about to audiences. And talk to me about some of the moves TOCA is doing and maybe even a cafe in the future. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, we did have a cafe based on the reservation for about 8 years. And just last year in April, we closed it. And it was just a lot of political and a lot of things that we were dealing with. So we felt that, you know, we still need to continue to do the work that we're doing, but, you know, maybe not right there. And so we decided to close and we thought we'll move somewhere else. And hopefully, you know, it'll be able to be more supportive for our organization. We are still doing a lot of the work that we've been doing in the community, maybe at a more relaxed way. And, you know, this summer we're going to be working on our farm and get that going for our summer crops. And, you know, it's a little bit difficult, especially when you are really trying to do a lot in the community and there's so many people wanting you to do this here and do this there. And, you know, we kind of took a little break for a year to sort of reevaluate where we really want to focus on. And, you know, this coming year, we're hoping to get our cafe and our gallery up and going in Tucson. Right now, we're still looking for a space where that can accommodate what we want to do. And we're also going to be working with another business that that have been supportive of our organizations over the years. And, you know, we're going to partner up and hopefully open this complex where we can promote and serve traditional foods, but also promote and sell local native art. And so we just need to find that right spot. And so for the past year, we've been on a quest to find this perfect spot. And so I think we're getting very close to that spot. And hopefully in the fall, we'll be able to open up our doors to the public.
How exciting. And you're also introducing, would be introducing people to traditional foods. And any thoughts on that of not only encouraging your nation over the years to look to some of these foods, now you're teaching others.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, there's this whole movement now with food sovereignty, especially in the native field. And it's really nice to know that there's other native communities around the country that are doing that as well. And with this whole movement, it's really encouraging and it's really opening the eyes of a lot of tribes. saying that, hey, listen, this is our food. This is very distinctive to our tribe, but it's also beneficial in a healthy way. You know, it's a way of us looking at really trying to heal ourselves as well. And it's really interesting to see what the movement has stirred up, you know, in Native country, but also in non-Native communities. You know, right now there's a lot of people out there wanting to know about Native foods and wanting to try Native foods. And so with the cafe that we're opening up, this is going to be a great opportunity. But also in the Native communities, there's other tribes that are opening up cafes and doing a lot of these adventures. And it's really exciting to see that. But it's also just exciting to see that they're also really focusing in their own regions, in their own tribes, to bring back those foods. And it's really exciting, and I'm very happy to be part of that movement. We're really excited, again, to have this cafe in Tucson and giving people, Native and non-Native, an opportunity to try the desert foods.
Indeed. And then, you know, we even got folks who are planning to grow some of this food this year. Well, I do appreciate your time today, Terrell Dew Johnson, telling us a little bit more about some of the things that you are connected to. And again, if you want to reach out to Terrell, you can go ahead and visit our website. You can also find this program in our archives and hear all the details about Terrell's work and his passion. You find that at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And that's going to do it for our hour. Thanks again to Terrell for joining us. And we also hope you'll join us tomorrow for a discussion about organized labor in tribal nations. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. Roman Garcia engineered today's program. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. We're back tomorrow.
Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael David. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.